If you haven't noticed, today is a day of celebration. We are celebrating 21 students total on both campuses, but 9 kids here on this campus who have just completed their confirmation journeys. And so if you're one of those kids that's just finished your confirmation journey, would you please stand up? Let us get a good look at you today. We're gonna put your picture on the screen too, just in case people can't see you. But we are so proud of you, so proud. Y'all can have a seat. They've been on this 6-week journey where they've been learning about the larger story of God across all of history, and they've been finding their place within that story. And all that led up to them going on a retreat this past weekend where they had the opportunity to serve in a very meaningful way, serving a meal in downtown Louisville. It looks like y'all served up a great meal. So who are those students again? Stand up one more time. Oh, yeah, good job, good job. We expect you to make us breakfast like that next week, all right? Yeah, yeah, we know you can do it now. You're in trouble. All right, but they did a great job. We had some amazing adults who went on that trip with them. We're so grateful for them. But last week, their very last lesson that they covered in confirmation, they asked you all to think about, like, what might you be doing in 5 or 10 or 25 years? And I was kind of sad because I love your all's parents. I had a great time with them, but I really wanted to hear how y'all were going to answer those questions. I don't know what y'all said, but here's what I do know. I know that this world is going to be a better place because you are in it. You are going to make change for good. One of the other things they talked about was, what does success look like? And that's what we've been talking about as a whole church family, right? We've been talking about, like, what does that even mean? It seems like this ever-moving target that everyone has this different definition for. And so what is it? What is our life supposed to be aiming for? And as I was thinking about that, I began to think about this little thing we call status symbols. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Those things, those objects, those achievements that kind of communicate to everyone else that you have arrived, right? That you're on top, that you're living the life. And it got me thinking back to when I was a young person, like these young people, what those status symbols were. So I want us all to go on a trip down memory lane, okay? Young people, you don't have to go on a trip. I just want you to think about today. But what were the status symbols when you were their age? Okay, think about it for just a second. And then turn and tell a neighbor one status symbol from your youth. Okay, go. Things. That's good. So when I ask this next question, I don't want to hear crickets, okay? Somebody talk back to me. Tell me what was the status symbol. Eric.
British Knights tennis shoes.
British not what is it?
BK.
BK Knight. Oh, yes. Yes, I remember these. Okay, somebody else?
Jordache jeans.
Ponytails. Oh, there you go. Who knew? Look at that. I'm afraid to let my dad speak, but go ahead. Penny loafers. Oh, yeah. Penny loafers. Anybody else?
Cool radio in your car.
A cool radio in your car. Nice. You wanted everybody to be able to hear you coming down the street, right? Yep. Indoor bathroom. Someone said that in the first service as well. Maybe we had a few more mention that. like I said, I started thinking about this for myself. And, you know, I grew up in a whole other century, my son likes to remind me, in the dark ages of the 1900s and the 1990s, to be, you know, really clear about it. And young people, I'm about to show you some things that are going to blow your mind that were status symbols that told everybody else that, like, you were cool, that you had it going on. Are you ready for this? The first one is this thing. Yes. This is called a Discman. I don't know where to start because you might not know what a CD is. But back in the olden days, we had this round little thing and held our music, and you had to put it in a stereo, and you could only listen to it in your room. But all of a sudden, these came along, and you could take your music with you wherever you went, as long as you were ready to carry 5 pounds along with you and keep it kind of level, because if you were, like, doing it side to side, it was going to skip. Yeah, the next ones, they got better. They did. Yeah. And I can tell you all, I somehow got one of these. I can't believe I got one. My mom took me to the Electric Avenue in Owensboro, Kentucky. I remember it. This is this big a deal. And I bought that. And of course, you had to get a CD to go along with it, right? There's this little song. Young people are going to have to go home and listen to it. It will become a favorite if you don't know it. I bought the Crisscross CD, the one with jump, jump. Yeah, that's what I got. The other thing you need to know about this is that there weren't really rechargeable batteries. So not only did you have to carry it around, but you had to carry extra batteries around with you so that you could listen to your music. Okay, so that was a status symbol. You're like, that's pretty cool if you got one of those, right? Here's another status symbol. Having your own personal computer in your home. Yes, this is what a computer looked like when we started getting these. They took up pretty much a whole room of your house. I remember when we got our first ones, we didn't have laptops you could put in your backpack and take to school with you every day. You had to sit down at a desk in your house and use this thing. It was slow as Christmas, but we thought it was great. And we thought the graphics were spectacular. And it was really bad, y'all. They're really bad. If you want to know what they're like, look up Oregon Trail and you'll see what we had back then. And then this last one, y'all, this is like the first version of a cell phone. You could not fit this in your pocket. In fact, you needed, yeah, the bag phones were good. I heard somebody say bag phones were before this, but this was the ones that, like, you know, we started to see out and about. The bag phone stayed in the car a lot, right? Yeah, this is the Zach Morris phone. And guess what? You could only make phone calls on this. There was no texting. We did not know what the internet was yet. You also had no games available to you. You just hoped you could get reception sometimes, some places. You know, it wasn't all that fantastic. But these things, they might look kind of ridiculous to you now. Do they look kind of ridiculous? Yeah. What was it? A TV remote, that was a big deal. It does look like a TV remote. Let me tell you about TV remotes really fast, Reed. The first TV remote that we had in my house, it was remote-ish. It had a cord that ran from the TV to the remote, but it worked, okay? It was great. Do y'all remember that? I remember that remote, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was. David changed the channel. These things might look ridiculous now, but these were the things that kind of communicated to everyone else that you had some status, that things were going well. And across history, these kinds of status symbols have always existed. There's always been these ways that people have outwardly communicated their success by showing off their wealth, trying to show off their status. And so you better believe in first century Corinth, which is the place that the Apostle Paul was writing to in our scripture passage today, that they had some status symbols. Right? They had some things that told everyone else, like, that they had arrived. It was a place that was extremely prosperous. It was kind of like at the hub of trade. People had to go there to sell what they had, to go from the east to the west. And so a lot was happening. A lot of money was being made. And so you have to know, like, people were showing that off in some ways. There was either certain jewelry or clothing that they wore. There were positions they found themselves in that told people that they had had this kind of success. Furthermore, Corinth was actually the home of the Isthmian Games, which is an athletic event that was only rivaled by the Olympics, okay? It was the same kind of thing as the Olympics. And if you came and you competed in these games and you won your race, guess what you got? You know, you got like a wreath placed on your head. And what did that do? That told everyone, you are a winner. You are victorious. You have succeeded. So all the way back then, they had these status symbols to be sure. But let me tell you about one symbol that would not have made the cut for them. Another symbol that would have been at the other extreme end of the spectrum. It is a symbol not of success, but rather back then it would have been seen as a symbol of failure. It would have been a source of shame. It would have been seen as a symbol not of strength, but of weakness. And let me show you what that symbol was. It was this, the cross. 2,000 years ago, people looked at this symbol in a very, very different way. We see it in a different light, right? But back then, people would have seen the cross and they would have never thought to wear it on a necklace around their necks. They would have never put it on a t-shirt or hung it on their wall because this symbol, it was this symbol of failure. It was a symbol of punishment, and not just any punishment, but the most severe, excruciating punishment reserved for only the worst criminals in the Roman Empire. You guys, it would be kind of like me walking up here today, instead of wearing a cross, wearing like the electric chair around my neck. Like if people saw that, they'd be like, what? It would seem like utter foolishness. But we need to understand that essentially that's what early Christians began to do. They began to see this symbol in a different light. They began to see the cross not as a symbol of failure, but rather as a symbol of fulfillment. They began to see it not as a symbol of loss, but a symbol of love. They began to see it not as a symbol of hate, but rather as a symbol of hope, not as a symbol of punishment, but rather a symbol of passion. Why? Because Jesus had overcome it, and he had absolutely transformed its meaning in the process. But guys, just think about it. Think about these other people surrounding these early Christians who haven't heard the good news, who haven't had time to kind of wrap their minds around what these Christians are talking about. They would have seen this. They would have seen them with the sign of the cross and thought, this is kind of crazy. This is foolishness. I want you to listen to what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1:18. He says, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those of us who are being saved, it is the power of God." You see, people all the way back then, and people still today who are moving through this world with no sense of hope, with no sense of hope that things could ever be different, with no sense of hope that their lives or this world could ever change, with no hope of redemption or restoration, then this cross, it can only mean one thing. It can only be a symbol of failure. Just another reminder that our world is broken, that there is death, and that there is destruction. However, Jesus, he came into our world as hope in person. And when he hung on this cross, he showed us that failure is never final, that the worst thing is never the last thing for us, that even the most pitiable punishment is not more powerful than God's love. This cross has showed us that not even death itself gets the final say in our lives. As Jesus hung on that cross, what he communicated to us is that the world can throw the very worst at us, the most ugly, destructive things at us. And even then, God says, nope, not more powerful. Nope, that can't stop the redemption and the restoration and the resurrection that God is working to bring everywhere, all the time, in our lives and in our world.
God took the cross and he transformed it from something that was meant to destroy us, and instead made it into this thing that gives us hope and healing and brings us fully alive. And so students, would you stand up one more time? I want to see where you are. Okay. I understand. You're like in here. It's hot. You're excited. You're not going to hear everything I say today. It's fine. But you can sit down. But I want you to hear the next things I say. Okay. And everybody else needs to overhear this as well. Okay. I need you to know, students, that there are going to be times in your life when you fail. And it's going to be hard. Nobody likes failure, right? There's going to be times when you mess up and maybe you find that you've hurt others or yourself. There are going to be times when you are going after some goal and you're not going to reach it. There's going to be times when bad things happen to you that are really out of your control, that you didn't cause, that you never would have chosen, that you certainly didn't deserve. And in those moments, when you are experiencing that failure, you might wonder, you might begin to doubt if there's any hope, right? In those moments, you might be tempted to believe that there is no coming back from that. In those moments, you might begin to consider that there just couldn't possibly be any forgiveness, that there couldn't possibly be any restoration or redemption or resurrection or second chances. You might only see hopelessness. But students, I want you to hear this good news today. Okay, here it is. Record what I'm about to say to you in your mind. And then I want you to put it like deep down in your heart. And when you need it, because someday you will, I want you to pull it out. Okay, here's what I want you to know. Because of the cross, failure is always an invitation to start again. Okay, we might not see any way forward, but guess what? God is wiser than us. We might not be able to see but just like one step in front of us, but our God, he sees the full picture. We might feel so weak that we don't know how to go on, but our God is strong. Because of the cross, there is always, 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 always hope. Paul goes on, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. The intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. The picture of success that is often held up for us as being wise, it tells us that we need all those status symbols. It tells us that we need to win and win and win, that we need to achieve and achieve and achieve, that we need to acquire and acquire and acquire, and that failure is kind of like death, that it's the end for us. But God's wisdom says that true success in our lives is living in the knowledge that God has already won for us. Because Jesus defeated death and rose again, failure is never final. What might feel like the end to us is just an invitation to start again with him. And in the process, be transformed. And in the process, grow. And in the process, be made more whole. A few weeks ago, I had the chance to go and hear Scott Erickson, who's an artist and a writer and a speaker, speak at the Capitol, because our friends at the library made that happen. We have his art all over the place here. I think this is one of his. We have pictures out in the Welcome Center. Whenever we do our Stations of the Cross, it's his artwork that we use to guide us. But he shared something with us that night that I think really captures the heart of this passage. And so let's watch together.
Once a great ship was built. It was strong, mighty, something to behold. And it was given a great purpose, to deliver important seeds on the far side of the ocean. The ship celebrated its great purpose. It thought, how great of a task, I must be valuable. Look at this great purpose I was given. This is what I was meant to do. So it set sail. On its journey, an unforeseen storm came upon it. It thought it could handle it. It was sure it could handle it, but the storm was much bigger than it planned for. It couldn't control the situation. The ship was wiped out by the storm. It found itself wrecked on some rocks. It couldn't move. It couldn't go anywhere. The great ship was lost in the ocean. As it sat there for a long time, it sat with its failure. Its failure to fulfill its purpose. But something unforeseen happened. Slowly the water seeped into the seeds, and they began to germinate and grow. They grew and grew, and over time, there was a large forest. One day, another ship came passing by, also broken and floundering from an unforeseen storm. It came to the broken ship island and asked, "May I rest here a while? I'm so tired from my journey." The great ship replied, "Sure, by all means." As the new ship rested, the great ship gave some of its wood to build a shelter for the crew of the other ship. They stayed a while. After they rested and were healed, the new ship left renewed for its journey. "Thank you for your hospitality. You really helped me." After a while, another ship came by. That ship also asked if it could rest for a while. It had been bruised and battered in a storm too, and needed a place to be. The great ship took some more of its wood and built another shelter for the much larger crew. When it was healed, it also went on its way. This kept happening. New ship after new ship kept coming, all injured by an unforeseen storm and needing a place to be for a while. The great ship realized that it had something to give, a place to rest, and solidarity from being wrecked as well by the unforeseen storms of the great sea. Pretty soon, the great ship decided to build a lighthouse so that all ships passing by that way could find a place to be cared for, to rest, and then continue on their journeys. Throughout the years, the great ship cared for many, many broken and bruised ships. This was a quizzical mystery to the great ship. Out of its own wreckage and failure, it became a gift to others. It always wondered if this was the purpose all along.
Because of the cross, what feels like the end is just an invitation. An invitation to start again. We can never give up because God never gives up on us. And students, I want you to know that not only does God not give up on you, but there are a whole bunch of grown-ups in this room who are never going to give up on you either. You can never make us unlove you.